All right, it is us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. There's a lot to talk about today. I have this story about Ches Palminteri, who was just on with Steve Cochran.
I love him.
Oh, he's such a good actor, such a good writer. I have this story that I need to tell you that I think is the quintessential show business story. Like, of all the stories I've ever heard about show business, it's from him and about him, and I'll tell it to you in a moment. But first, let's talk about what happened last night. Were you surprised at the outcome of what took place here in Chicago?
I just know that everyone I had heard said it's going to be a runoff, the Daily Preckwinkle runoff.
Right.
Everybody. Walter said that. I trust Walter Jacobson, who was on with us yesterday.
Right.
Steve Cochran said that. That's all I was hearing. And I was listening last night to the group of people assembled, led by Justin Kaufman.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to some of the results come in, and I'm a little surprised. And I'm happy with the results. I am too. Dog in the race. I couldn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of Chicago for who the two people are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not proud of Chicago for the turnout.
Yeah, the turnout was
way
very, very low.
Not the lowest ever. I heard Andrea Darlis say that. We bypassed the lowest ever, so that's good.
That's good news.
Millennials are not voting like they did in the last election.
Yeah, the voter turnout
Slackers.
Tended to slide a little on the older side than the younger side. Do you put this on... I think we talked about this with Walter Jacobson yesterday at this time. The fact that... Everybody kind of was in on the fact that this would not be the deciding factor in who the mayor would be. This was a preliminary to decide the two people who would run. Was that part of it, do you think, or was that not? It have to be.
I kind of feel, 14 candidates, or how many candidates?
14.
Yeah, 14. It's almost like your vote doesn't matter. It totally does,
yeah.
But you're thinking, this is going to be a waste of my time. Now, is it... This runoff thing, this is a whole other election?
Well, no, it's the same election. It's just this narrowed it down, the field down to the two.
Right, so what happens now?
Well, whoever wins in this next one, they're the mayor.
So isn't that more money to have another...
Yeah, it is.
So that's bad in a way, too.
And not only more money, but people have predicted that this one could get a little more fierce. This preliminary one really was pretty well-mannered for the most part from everybody. And I don't know, did you happen to see any of the concession speeches last night?
I heard them.
You heard them? Didn't you kind of think that in almost all of them, I'm trying to think of one that doesn't fit this, there was almost a sense of relief. Did you get any of that? Almost everybody who spoke, I guess Willie Wilson's was a little bit different. He doesn't seem to want to give it up somehow.
I didn't hear the relief.
His wasn't really a concession speech. His was a prayer. And then, well, that's the night. But from everybody, everybody, they just kind of, we fought. We tried our best. Let's all stand behind whoever wins. There was a lot of just kind of, all right, well, gave it a shot. Didn't happen.
See, it would be tough for me to lose something big. Like Bill Daley's concession speech, I thought was great. And he just,
they
that
were
was
all
it.
Good.
I didn't hear relief. I heard, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
We lost fair and square. Let's work together. That's what I heard.
That was enough.
I heard
that's
hope.
Well, I'll take hope. I would like some hope. I didn't realize with Mendoza that Jane Byrne's daughter Kathy was running that campaign. I didn't know that until last night. Did you?
No, I just learned that now.
As they were all on the stage, I said to my wife, boy, that looks like Jane Byrne's daughter. And my wife said, yeah, it does. And then as she was kind of naming who was up there, it was Kathy Byrne. She looks just like her mom.
I got nothing. You're waiting for an answer from me.
She looks just like her mom. She does.
Jane Byrne.
She does.
I love that picture of her smoking. Was it with Bozo? Is that the picture that was the Jane Byrne
famous
picture?
Jane Byrne picture is one with her daughter, Kathy, where it's the two of them wearing tube tops with the Blues Brothers.
Oh, I remember that one, too.
Who are not wearing tube tops, probably for the best.
I like the Bozo and Jane Byrne one better.
She got a cigar going and Bozo's
She's got a cigarette. Look at that. You don't remember this
I don't
picture?
Remember this one.
Look at this. Look it up.
Oh, I do remember it now. Yeah,
she's just having a smoke and there's Bozo. That, to me, that says Chicago.
That's what Bozo's supposed to say to her. The smoking's bad, Jane. Please. No smoking in the big top. Please. I don't know why he's not taking advantage of that.
I think he has a bottle under his big top. I don't know.
But for the most part, I think most people are a little bit surprised. Lori Lightfoot didn't come out of nowhere. Everybody predicted she'd be somewhere in the top four or five.
I didn't think she'd be up there that high.
But not that she would be the top vote getter.
She's the one that I wondered, wow, it's getting real now. This may happen.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. I'm proud that we're making history. It was the largest pool of candidates. We made history for that.
14 was, yeah.
And now the first African-American female.
But a very low turnout. You would almost think just by virtue of there being so many candidates, that would spark more interest. Like all those people must know a bunch of people.
You know what? You're right.
Wouldn't you think that alone would bring in more people to the polls? It didn't.
Huh.
And there were a couple of candidates that only got like a couple of thousand votes.
That's sad.
That's only a couple thousand more than you and I got. And we weren't running.
I'm Pat Tomasulo, dude.
He did all right. He did well. All right. We'll take a break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Cue the music.
Now the music.
That EAS test throws us off.
It always does, doesn't it? It always does.
Is Ryan Burrow available? Because I just have a quick question, and I know coming up we've got a Chaz Palminteri story.
Yeah.
What's up?
Why was this election held in February when most are in November? Do we have an answer to that?
Well, it's a city election. City elections are a little different.
All right.
Yeah.
Ryan,
they run on a different schedule.
I was telling Wendy that there have been ideas of why it's held in a colder weather situation when a warmer weather situation would lend itself to more voters. Is there any theory there in the newsroom?
No, and you know what? I got to go back and look at it because, you know, up until, I want to say, the 1930s, yeah, we used to have our presidential elections in the spring.
But not anymore, now November.
Yeah, they got switched to the fall. I'm not exactly sure. You know, municipalities have their own thing. I know my suburban town has a library referendum coming up in April that we've got to vote on.
Heated.
So, yeah, it's going to be hotly contested.
Yeah.
Millions of dollars poured into that,
yep.
I know.
But
what's it called?
So.
What?
It's a library referendum.
Some library referendum.
Called Book It.
Yeah. Book It. Book It, Dano.
Yep. Book It. I'm not exactly sure the origin of that, though.
Because someone texted, you know, come on, you want us to get out there in February and vote? And then
right.
I thought, why is it February?
Should be warmer weather.
Well,
right?
You're going to get another chance in April for you Chicagoans who maybe didn't get a vote in that first time round and were punting and waiting till a little bit warmer. I have a feeling you're going to see a much larger turnout the second time
around
than that first
time. Oh, yeah.
People hope
just
so.
Couldn't decide. There were too many. They said, well, you know what? We'll let everyone else pick two, and then I'll choose from those two.
That's what I do with my girlfriend's emails. I let them figure out where we're going and what day, and I
read
just
the last
sit back.
One.
Yeah, and then I go, okay, I'm good.
That's how to do it. Very smart. Very smart.
All right, Chaz.
All right. Steve Cochran, for those of you who didn't get to hear it, had Chaz Palminteri on. Best known for his work in A Bronx Tale. He wrote it. He was one of the co-stars of it. He's now on Modern Family. He's been in a bunch of movies and TV shows. He's a really good actor, a fine writer, and a very, very nice man. Have you ever been lucky enough to interview him?
I've seen him. Yeah. I don't remember. Bill, you know I don't remember who I've interviewed.
I had him on a couple times at another station, and he's a really good guy. You can't help but be happy for him. It's hard to say, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
All right. So there's this. A couple of years ago, he's in town. This is about 10 years ago. He's in town doing the one man show version of A Bronx Tale. It's just him on stage telling the story, and it's fantastic. It's a lot of fun to see. So I'm reading up on him before he comes in, and it says in one of his bios that he got his start doing soap operas, and I didn't know that about him. I never saw him until A Bronx Tale. So this is all off the air. I say to him, Chaz, you did soap operas, and he just kind of smiles and nods, and I go, I forgive me, but I can't see you doing soap operas. It doesn't seem like something you do. And he goes, you know, I wanted to be a writer, and it was just an extra job, and I went in, and I said, but on the credits for these soap operas, it just says you participated in the soap operas. There's no character names. Who did you play? And he goes, oh, well, the true story is I didn't actually play a character. He said, on one of the soap operas, there was an actor, and he goes, and today he's very, very famous. He goes, but back then he was just a soap opera actor. And he goes, and he had, like they do on soap operas, he had an evil twin. He goes, so what would happen is, in any scenes where it was that guy and his evil twin, they'd bring me in, and they'd shoot me from the back or the side. I looked enough like him so that whenever, you know, there'd be a scene with both of them, you'd see the side of me nodding or walking away or something like that. And I go, oh, that's interesting. I go, and that guy's famous now? He goes, oh, he's a big TV star now. I go, who is it? He goes, I don't want to say. I go, okay, you don't have to say. I go, is there a reason for that? He goes, you know, during the breaks, he goes, I'd be in the dressing room, And I wanted to be a writer, so I'd always be writing. And he'd come in, and he was very discouraging to me. He goes, you know, you're wasting your time. He goes, you're not going to be a writer. He goes, soap operas, that's the future. You want to be a soap opera actor. He goes, I've been doing these for years. It's fun, and they pay you great money and stuff like that. Stop wasting your time. And he goes, and I was so conflicted because I knew that this was just I'm filling time. I really want to be a writer. But this guy, he goes, and then as time went on, he got ruder and ruder about it. Hey, put the writing down. Don't waste people's time with the writing and stuff like that. And he goes, it was very hard for me because I respected this guy. I go, who are you? I'm not gonna, that's not part of that. I'm not, there's a code with actors. We don't rat on it. I go, oh, that's fine. You don't have to tell me. As soon as he left, I go to the Google and I look it up and I go, what soap opera was Chaz Palminteri on? Who did he double for? So the answer, just between you and me, is John O'Hurley, the guy who played Jay Peterman on Seinfeld for years and years and years. So about a year later, that guy, John O'Hurley, is in town. He's doing the musical version of Chicago, and he's in it. So I want to get his side of the story.
You're a rabble-rouser.
So I go, John, what was it like being on soap operas? I go, I remember didn't you play a guy who had an evil twin? He goes, not only did I have an evil twin, he goes, but he was played by the great Chaz Palminteri. He goes, and I'll never forget it because I was so encouraging to him. I'd always say to him, you don't want to be in soap operas. You want to be a writer. That's where the money is.
So who do you believe?
I want to believe Chaz Palminteri.
I believe Chaz.
I do, because you could just tell by his body language that it was hurting him. You know, that his true passion was writing and that somebody that he respected was trying to stop that. And John O'Hurley's version was just a carefree kind of, I always told him, you got to be a writer.
That's a showbiz answer.
Yeah.
You know, like once he became famous, well, of course I encouraged him.
He's got to follow the writing.
That's pretty wild.
Isn't that great?
I didn't realize that he was on Hill Street Blues and Matlock and Dallas.
Who was he on Hill Street Blues? Not a regular, right? He probably did a guest starring role or something?
Yeah, Sonny Capolito in one episode. Wise Guy, he's been in so much stuff, Chaz Palminteri.
Wise Guy with Ray Sharkey and Ken Wall, that version of Wise Guy?
TV series,
Yeah.
Usual Suspects, he was great in that.
He's perfect.
That's a great movie.
He's so good in that. You could kind of say of him that he's slightly been typecast as a mafioso, but I think he embraces it, and to his credit, he plays them all differently. He really does.
He does. That's a good point.
Like a lot of actors would go, oh, I've done that character before. I know what to do with that. But if you watch his work, it's always a different version of that guy.
Mulholland Falls, too. That's a good movie.
Oh, yeah, with Nick Nolte and Jennifer Connelly. He really, like when you think about it, his first big movie role, he's opposite De Niro. And think about what that would be like to share a screen with him. And you're not really competing, but just to hold up against Robert De Niro the first time you're in a movie, and he does. He does really well.
That's a great story, Peterman.
Right. All right, we must take a break. We've got a full show for you. We're thrilled that you're listening. Keep it right here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And yesterday we were talking to Bridget Carey from CNET about videos on YouTube Kids. And in the middle of a kid's video, they would insert another video describing how to commit suicide. There are a lot of bad things out there. It's hard to police everything. And some even worse things going on YouTube are child predators out there. And we have Chris Hadnagy on the line with us, founder and executive director and board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation. Chris, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good. Now, this was intriguing to us because you are trying to find people like, I guess we call them ethical hackers and IT people, to try and figure this out. YouTube is a very dangerous place, and every kid in the world watches YouTube videos.
Seems like every kid on Earth is not just watching, but they have their own channel, and they're posting their whole lives on YouTube.
So there are a lot of predators out there who target children. First of all, talk about that.
You know, it's interesting. When I saw that video from the gentleman who posted about the gymnastics and how that puts you in this algorithm and that feed, I went through step by step and guaranteed exactly what he said happened. And it was appalling, truly appalling, the comments that were there. You have innocent kids not putting out pornographic videos, right? They were just putting out videos. Maybe they're trying on new clothes. They were playing games. They were doing gymnastics. They were doing artistic things. But the comments is where we really saw some disgusting things. Not just people commenting about these little kids and their bodies and saying sexual things, but then actually posting numbers to WhatsApp groups where pedophile rings were getting together now to discuss those videos or to trade in other content. But it was truly, truly appalling.
Isn't it fairly simple to trace those comments and figure out where the source is on those?
You know, that's a really interesting question. That's kind of what we do with the Innocent Lives Foundation, is try to find those folks that are posting those comments and then look into who they are in real life. Here's the issue, especially with something like a WhatsApp group. WhatsApp is an end-to-end encryption application that's owned by Facebook. So it basically, once you're in that application, the encryption stop someone from really locating the people that are in that group. You need to be invited into that group. You just can't gain access to that group. So if they want to, and these people do, they're easily able to hide their steps, so it's much more difficult to find out who they are. And those of them that are experienced in this type of predatory activity, they're not using their real identities or their real names, so they're using fake accounts in order to perpetrate these things.
Can I ask the biggest question of all? What the heck is wrong with these people that they post these things just out in the open like that?
Yeah, you know, so this has been my soapbox, and I know it's not a very popular one, but I'm glad you asked that question, because this is really where my brain goes. I have two children myself, and I think that, you know, instead of, you know, burning the stake in front of YouTube, sure, they have to fix a lot of things. They really do. But where are the parents? Where are the parents? You know, when I went through this, process to see what was out there on YouTube as part of the Innocent Lives research, and I was appalled at how many 9 to 12-year-old girls were doing something called swimsuit hauls, right? So they get these brand-new swimsuits or these brand-new evening gowns, and they're trying them on YouTube, and things that should be private, things that you shouldn't be putting out on public channels. And you have to have some kind of parental supervision to even start this thing, but their parents are letting them put these videos out there where they're trying on bikinis, they're trying on swimsuits, they're trying on dresses that are not covering enough, and there they are out there, and now their videos have tens of thousands or even more views, and a lot of them are from people who have very, very bad and nefarious thinking about them, sadly.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't blame a young girl for wearing something sexy or trying a bathing suit on. I mean, I don't know.
No, you can't. I agree.
And I don't know what the kid's purpose is, but a lot of times these are just little girls or young girls that would be trying them on in front of their friends. We've all done it. I'm sorry. You get a new swimsuit. Hey, what do you think of this? Everybody is out there to gain praise from everyone else. So I see everything. Like, which dress should I wear? This one or this one? It's like we're looking to everyone else to give us some kind of approval.
I agree with that 100%. You cannot blame the girl for wearing the swimsuit, but why does that need to be on YouTube? Right. So if I want to see if something I'm wearing, I'm going to go ask my friends, my family. I don't need to post it to YouTube and then get, you know, 100 million opinions. I'm going to ask my friends and family, not a bunch of strangers, what they think about how I look in this swimsuit.
But that we're older.
100%.
That's our way of thinking. But the kids, they want likes and approvals. That's really what they're going for. So they'll come up with, you know, some idea to get all these likes.
I agree. And it is part of the social media. Oh, how do we know how we want to word it? This day and age of how social media has retrained our young people to interact with each other is through likes and the thumbs up.
Chris, yesterday, we do a weekly segment about technology, and we were talking about the fact that, and Wendy said this at the beginning of the segment, there are now people who will take kids' videos and insert something horrific in the middle of it The one we talked about yesterday was how to commit suicide right there in the middle of a kid's video. So I said, with the millions and millions and millions of videos on YouTube, you can't put all the pressure on them to police it. There's just too many. And she agreed. What are your thoughts about that? It's a volume problem. There's too many to police.
Yeah, I agree. Volume definitely is the issue. And it's also back to the issue of what we're talking about with just the gymnastics or swimsuit videos. It's a volume problem. All of this has to do with a volume problem. Media is coming at us in such high quantity, at such high rate. The moderators, as we call them, right? The people who are being paid by social media companies to go through these things and look for content and comments and things. You know, they're those poor people that have to do this for a living. Imagine the amount of content they need to go through to find that one, you know, 30 or 60 second clip in the middle of a Peppa Pig video.
Right.
That is trying to shock and awe a poor 2 or 4 year old.
You mentioned that you have two kids, you said, right?
I do.
All right. So what advice did you give to them, or what was the law that you handed down and said, from now on, this is what is allowed and what is not allowed? How'd you handle it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for me, and this is going to sound very authoritarian, but this is the way we manage it in my house, especially as a security guy, is what I do for a living, is the internet is a privilege, right? It's not a right.
Right.
So what we did for our house is when we had things on the internet, we monitored the house internet. So there was certain content that just was not allowed to be viewed. You know, anything that adult content, which is not allowed on our network here at home. In addition, social media networks that my children would be on when they were very young, we had to approve those social media networks if they were going to be on it, and then they had to be set up privatized by me. So we didn't just trust, you know, my 10-year-old at the time, say, hey, go ahead, you could set this up, and here's how you'd be private. We helped her set it up. So then we would go and we'd set up the privatization for it, make sure it was private, make sure people couldn't just come onto her account. And then her friends had to be authorized in order to come onto that account, so that way it wasn't just a free-for-all. Now, as they got older, of course, you know, freedom opened up and the reins opened up, and they had to make more choices, and we educated them on how to make those choices. But it was a slow process that we educated them on as they continued to get older. So that way they were making wise choices that were not just based on what everyone else was doing, but it was based on how to stay safe and secure in a digital age.
And isn't it sad that you have to explain to a very naive, innocent child the reasons behind this? Because those reasons probably wouldn't occur to a little kid, but you as the parent have to explain what they're not aware of, right?
It's terrible. You know, especially with what I do for Innocent Lives Foundation, you kind of think, I'm going to keep this away from my kids. But I remember the first time that my daughter, she was about 7 years old, and she was sitting, she has her own Skype account. She would chat with her friends that were not local. She had friends in Ohio, friends in Florida, friends all over. She would chat with them over Skype. And her Skype account was not private. And the first time she's sitting there and the Skype rings and she answers it on her laptop, and when she picks it up on the camera comes a naked guy.
Oh my
so
God.
Some random guy called her, and it was just some naked guy. And it was everything that I had been teaching and talking about to all these parents and the people flashed in my mind that I didn't do it here at home. And that's when we, you know, changed all the laws and the rules, because it was like, whoa, like this just happened to my daughter.
Yeah.
Out of the blue, just some rando was looking through the Skype list and saw, and we found out how Amaya had, she just had like a little blurb about herself. You know, hey, Amaya, I'm 7 years old. You know, I live here. It was complete innocence. She wasn't doing anything wrong because she was just a little girl. Wow. And this guy was a predator.
That is disgusting.
It is. And it's terrible that you have to do this for your kids. It's terrible that you have to sit them down and say, hey, honey, I'm sorry. There are bad people out there that want to do bad things. And this is why we have to have these rules. But in this day and age, sadly, if you don't do that, they may find out in a very more difficult way.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We have to take a break. We'll continue talking about this. Some comments from listeners as well. 312-981-7200. Chris Hadnagy, founder, executive director, and board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation. We will continue next here on 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Chris Hadnagy is our guest, founder, executive director, and board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation. Kids are using YouTube, and unfortunately, child predators are too. Chris, we got a text asking why I'm hassling you. I'm not hassling you. I'm just throwing it out there why kids do it. And the point is what you mentioned. We have to talk to our kids these days. We have to check out what our kids are putting up on YouTube. The good news is there are some major advertisers that are pulling their ads because of this, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, I didn't feel hassled at all. I think your questions were great and very pointed. And what I loved about it is sometimes when I go and I talk to news stations about this, people don't ask that hard question, because I do think that we need to focus more on parental supervision and how to educate our kids, and less on how to punish YouTube, and more about like how parents need to step in and talk to their kids and monitor what their kids are doing.
And it's you know, terrible conversations. You mentioned when your daughter got that Skype call of a naked man. Were you there when it happened? And if you were, thankfully.
I was. I was in the next room, and she came running in and said, "Oh, Dad, this call just came up, and this guy came on, and he had no clothes on." And I right away, of course, went into dad mode and got this guy on the Skype, and I just completely went into, you know, finding out who he is mode.
What the hell are you doing, buddy? Yeah.
So you have his info. You have his number. What do you do with that information?
Well, at the time, and this is going back quite a few years now, at the time, Skype was not owned by Microsoft, and there was an ability to find out the IP address of where a call came from.
Right.
So I did that, and I located him, and he was a Frenchman, lived in France, and I found his name and all that stuff, and that was easier. Now, this comes back to the root of the problem that we're talking about here with YouTube, is now they have created so many applications like WhatsApp and other applications like that that enable these groups to exist in such an encrypted digital world that these people can hide in plain sight. They can be your next door neighbor and you wouldn't even know it, because they can exist in a space that it's almost impossible to find them.
But it's too easy for predators now. Their job, you know, half their job is taken care of now. They just go on the internet. It's not right. And these are... go ahead.
I'm sorry. No. It's a hard balance, right? Because we want to be secure. We need to be secure, because you turn around every other day, there's something getting hacked. Some bank account, some health care, some power grid. Something's being hacked out in the world, and it's our information. Right? The average American probably has their information breached in one of the big breaches in the last 12 months, if we look at 2018. Right? So our information's somewhere being sold. So we want to be more secure. We're trying to educate people to use better passwords, more secure encryption, VPNs. But as we create those technologies, these predators also figure out how to use them to keep themselves safe and secure. So it's a very no-win situation. How do we create security for us without securing the predators? We can't really do it.
I hate thinking of these poor, vulnerable children, because think about it. You put a video up and you get somebody who's not coming on the screen naked but is acting like a friend. And, you know, again, everybody's seeking approval, and these kids are so vulnerable. We need to say, if you don't know this person, do not communicate with them. Do not give them your phone number or tell them where you live. Don't share private information. Would that be a first step with having that conversation with your kids?
It would. And you know, even before that, I would say that parents also need to have the conversation. And this is what I did with my daughter. It's like, okay, you want an Instagram account? That's fine. But I also must have the passwords at all time. And once every X period, whatever it is, 1 week, 1 month, I'm going to log in and check it. Because I'll give you a terrible, scary story. We just worked this case. We got called from a father in California who found out, because his daughter had been getting groomed and ended up being a some 40-year-old guy, but he made an account of a 14-year-old girl, and he had looked at this girl and found she was a gymnast and she was into gymnastics, and he made an account about some 14-year-old girl who loved gymnastics, and he developed a relationship with this girl. They were best friends. They chatted every day, all day, through school, after school, before school, waking up, before bed. Their chats were hours long. And this girl was ready to go meet this person for a date. And she would have been kidnapped if the dad had not found out and intervened, and then we stepped in and got law enforcement involved.
That's horrible, so, Chris. Horrible.
It's horrible, and it's scary, and she didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
She just was looking for a friend, and they had mutual interests. And this girl was in the gymnastics, and this fake girl was in the gymnastics. And they both had arguments with their dads, and every time she had an argument with her dad, this online identity had an argument with her dad. So they bonded over these instances, and before you know it, this friendship developed over weeks. Where they were so close, it's like, we should just go and hang out. We should go away together for the weekend. We should run away and just go and tell our parents who the boss is. And they had this whole plan. And it was when this person online started asking for a little bit more of a risky picture-taking session when the girl felt a little odd and then told her dad. And then dad snapped into action, looked on the internet, found innocent lives, called us. We helped to locate the person and then hand it over to law enforcement. But, I mean, how many of those cases don't turn out that way? So I think the first step has got to be, and we told the dad the same thing, you've got to be monitoring your kids' online activities.
What about secret accounts?
Answer, but you have to do it.
What about secret and private accounts that, you know, we may not be aware of?
Yeah.
That's a whole other issue.
It is. It is. You know, we can go on for days on that one because I feel, and I'm in the industry, I feel like it's a constant battle between parent and kid to see who's going to outsmart who, right?
Yeah.
Because they can start their own accounts. And at the end of the day, it has to be a open, willing relationship, not adversarial, right? So for me, it's not me sneaking to get my daughter's phone and grabbing it and hopefully she doesn't catch me. It's me saying, okay, honey, it's time for me to check some things and hoping that she's not sneaking and explaining to her why. Saying, like, look, here's a news story. Look what happened. This girl just got abducted because she was chatting with this guy on social media, and now I'm scared, and it's right in our neighborhood. I just want to check and make sure you're safe.
Great way to go about it.
Yeah, just openly communicating and not making it, I know you're doing bad things on the internet, so give me your phone.
It's, right.
I'm your dad. My main priority in life is keeping you safe.
Amen.
So that's all I want to do.
Chris, I really think mentioning what you just said is key to all this and telling them that a lot of these predators are masquerading as kids because a kid is so innocent and believing, and they want to believe they're really talking to a peer of theirs, not some adult that's out for awful means. Thanks so much for sharing these stories with us, Chris. We really appreciate it. And sorry Wendy was so rude to you.
Shut up.
No, I'll find it in my heart to forgive her.
All right,
I will.
That's nice of you.
You're great. Chris Hadnagy, great job. Founder, executive director, and board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation. And if anybody is having some issues, what's the best way to contact you, Chris?
They just go to innocentlivesfoundation.org. They can find all information there about how to report a case, reach out to us, support our cause. All of that is right on the site there.
Great work. Keep it up. Looking forward to talking to you again sometime.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Really appreciate it. Wow. That's a lot.
I'm scared. You know what, Bill? I got to tell you, if I was communicating with someone online and we had like interests,
you'd want to trust them.
I probably would.
And you're an adult.
I know.
So think about somebody much younger.
Makes me sick.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then Dane Neal stops by.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Ryan, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dane Neal. Normally here in the studio, but unable to attend today's presentation because you filled in very late last night, didn't you, Dane?
For the last 3 days in for Nick DiGillo. You know how he loves movies and the Oscars, and he decided to approach the Oscar party kind of like a Mardi Gras situation, and it just keeps going. The party never stops.
So. He is sick. Do not lie. Nick is sick.
Yeah.
I was just trying to enhance the brand, you know, like a rock star. You know, you just say that they've trashed the hotel room because
right.
it's
yes.
good for the fan base.
Although Nick is too honest because he keeps posting on his Facebook page, I feel like crap, couch, soup, TV, you know?
Oh,
so he's letting
we've had fun.
Are you in for the rest of the week for him, Dane?
You know what? I don't know because he's such a cloak and dagger guy. And, of
yes.
course, you know, you never know. One of those, you know, amazing recoveries and in this day and age, those inspirational stories, and he's open to rise. So I've been getting, like, a text from Stephanie about 2 in the afternoon saying, hey, could you can you go fill it? So I have it, but now I'm onto it. So I've rested a tiny bit today, and so I'm ready. If I get that call, I'll slide down the fire pole and we'll mobilize.
Good. What a trooper you are. An inspiration. There, I said it. Dane, one of Chicago's biggest conventions coming to town, the 2019 International Home and Houseware Show. I've been to a couple of these. That's a good time.
They try to make it. So that's weird that you say that, Bill, because that's not necessarily, they wouldn't say it's their, it's kind of their goal or one of the objectives is to make it a good time. But it is, if you're interested in the kind of products that are going to be either the next George Foreman grill or, are on shelves around or in Bed Bath & Beyond or whatever. And it isn't just kitchen stuff and cooking stuff. It's a lot of lifestyle stuff, too. They try to make it fun. So there's always some cool things to see. A lot of great personalities, in the past you would run into a Billy Mays. You won't run into him now unless there's they do like a channeling session, but you'll see a
there's
lot
a
of
new gadget that
there.
Brings people back so you can interview him.
Oh, I like it. where it's like, what would Billy Mays say?
Yeah,
so there's a lot of that stuff and a lot to see, a lot for the senses. They throw in some food, so it's pretty great.
It starts this Saturday, and remind me, who's allowed to go to this? Is this something that the public can attend?
The public, I think there's a lot of the people in sort of the industry of whether food and appliances and those trades, they consider themselves members of the public, but no, you have to, so it's a trade show, so you've got a lot of business that happens too, so as much fun as it may be for you and I to check it out and share that with listeners, there's, companies from, I think it's 130 countries, there's exhibitors, somewhere over 2,000, maybe 2,200 of them, and they're from all over the place. We're kind of lucky, more than kind of lucky, right? It's another thing Chicago has that we sort of take for granted, whether it's the biggest auto show, whether it's the National Restaurant Show, whether it's like Lollapalooza or this, the whole world comes to Chicago and we're kind of on display for the world.
What are you looking forward to seeing? Do you have any advance notice on what will be shown there this year?
I've got a little bit. They trickle it out, and there's different trends in there. Some of it is the colors, like the hot colors. And so this, whereas a couple of years ago, one of the hot colors, I guess it's multiple colors, or is it no colors? You can see it, was camouflage. This year.
I love that.
Wait, who just said that? I heard a voice, but I can't find. Oh, it's you, Wendy. You're wearing camouflage. I didn't know it was you.
I'm like, what are you doing?
I thought it might have been Billy Mays, but I really didn't know. So this year they say that it's blue and orange, and that's kind of the way that we think about it. Blue and orange, those are Bears colors. I think that's great. But, just like we've talked with Wendy before about, people who design, nail polish colors, or there's always like those, strategic namers. And so it's not just blue and orange. It's like vivid living coral and
raw pumpkin.
Blue. Right. Denim sunset, or something like that. Mm-hmm. So blue and orange are the kind of things that people are not only doing for their kitchens and their houses, but also kind of pots and pans. So that's one thing.
Wait, can I ask a question about that? Because I'm always curious. Number one, whose job is it to decide what colors will be in this upcoming year? And number two, does the average person really buy into that and say, wow, I just heard blue and orange are going to be, I got to go out and get blue and orange stuff?
As a member, as you are too, a card-carrying member of the Jaded and Cynical Club,
yes.
I got to say that, how can that even be? Maybe it's maybe colors and it's maybe a round robin basis that haven't been hot for a while. Okay, orange, it's you, right? Or blue, come on, let's go, let's do this. But I got to think
other,
maybe,
Dane, do you know what other year blue is popular in? Every year since the beginning of time.
That's not true for kitchens, though. I mean, they have navy blue cabinetry.
If you heard that, would you go, wow, blue, I got it, now I have to
get
blue stuff? Would?
I know that I just redid my kitchen, got the cabinets at Builder Supply Outlet, and gray was very popular. Dane, you can back me up on this. Gray was new wood color,
right.
I wanted gray cabinets. It was popular. I loved it. I was remodeling at the time, so it did kind of base my decision.
But then in a year, when they say this year's colors are lavender and yellow, what will you do?
I would paint the walls, because I want to do either either turquoise or lime green on my kitchen walls.
Yeah.
Jim is telling me, no, you're not. So then I'm thinking maybe I'll get some tile in that color, because I just want, people want something that's bold and pops. Would you agree with that, Dane?
Oh, my gosh. You know, Wendy, you're right there. You're drinking the Kool-Aid because that's exactly what they want you to do. Probably part of the reason is so that when it comes, you know, when it goes in and out of favor, that you're kind of staying with the times, being current, buying new stuff. You know, that's one of the things. Two words for that, and I think about this and build your thoughts, is,
yeah,
you know, I think staying power. You know, you want to get something that's kind of classic if you can.
Right.
Because I think of two words, harvest gold. Remember, when avocado, harvest gold, right, and those things, and you've got to replace your refrigerator, not because it doesn't work, but just because it's, you know, now deemed ugly.
I agree with you. And my mom had a turquoise oven and stovetop and refrigerator. I think that's why I want to go back to the turquoise.
Oh, yeah. It reminds me of that. Yeah. Yeah.
You mean like the turquoise, like they used to, like, is the color of like a bar of Zest, right? You
know, yeah.
Right. You know that will always be in style.
But that's why you go with the paint, the things like that, or a backsplash, something you can change. With cabinetry, you know, I don't know if I'd be bold enough to go, and they make like orange and navy blue,
of course.
But
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Dane, can you sit tight, Dane? Are you able to sit tight?
How do you do that?
Yeah, sure.
I've seen him do it.
I'm strapped in.
All right. More of Dane Neal. He's currently sitting tight. We'll continue this in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dane Neal is our guest. He is currently not in studio because he's been filling in for Nick DiGiulio all this week. And as far as we know, Dane, you will be doing that tonight or not doing it tonight? Do you know yet? You don't know yet.
As far as we know, we don't know.
All right.
So we're not sure.
If people want to, can we give your home phone? And if people want to call later to find out if you'll be hosting, will you oblige them and let them know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Or I'll tweet it out. Who knows? You know, I want to be modern. I want to be cutting edge, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll figure out that way. And it was funny, while during the commercial break, I was thinking like the history of the houseware shows. It's 120 years. So this is the 120th year. And I was wondering when we were talking last night a little bit about, like, well, what did they debut, you know, in year one? Was it like the fork? You know, I'm just like, it was like, hey, it's amazing. You could, maybe it was the spork. But you think of things like, you know, the Showtime rotisserie oven, you know, from Ronco, or the George Foreman grill that seemed kind of cutting edge and wow at the time. And now we're getting into the trends, just like on your phone, where your phone got big and got small, and you know, and you have more things or less things. Now they're having all these kind of different things you want built into one thing, like an Instapot was a big thing last year. Now they've got Instapots that also are like pressure cookers, rice cookers, air fryers, everything kind of built in one thing, so you have less items. So, Wendy, I wanted to ask you, is it cool to have a bunch of different things, or would you like to consolidate and have kind of one thing that does a bunch of different things you need to do?
I'm mixed on this because I never tried the Instapot. I don't have room on my counters for all these gadgets, so there's something to be said for combining them, but... Mm-hmm. Do you really need gadgets? I mean, and the air fryer, does a French fry that's air fried taste as good as your cast iron skillet and oil?
Well, if you go by the infomercial, the answer is yeah. You do need it, number one. It's great.
How are you living without it, Wendy? It's impossible to imagine a life without it.
No, and these things work too. So you've got that, you know, where you're able to do a bunch of different things, control the ingredients and some of the things. And then on the technology side, that's something I don't think is going away. As the Harvest Gold refrigerator may have been a thing of the past, at least in favor, you know, technology has gotten to the point where just as you can control your home, kind of smart home technology, and dim the lights and put the security system on and yell at intruders who are trying to steal packages off your porch, now you could start your stove, you can turn it off, you can monitor the temperature on your grill, you can make cappuccino all from your phone.
I don't need to do that.
No?
I like to get my hands dirty and work in the kitchen.
Yeah. Now, Dane, based on what you just said, my guess is over the last couple of years, one of the busiest things there at the houseware show would be home coffee makers. I'm not a coffee guy. I don't understand it, but people take this very, very personally, don't they?
Well, you think, you know, Joe DiMaggio, right? And you think Juan Valdez, some of those coffee icons throughout history.
Yep.
You know, and Folgers crystals, the more crystals that you could get, you know that you were
Mrs. Olson.
Truly living.
Yes.
So here's the thing that, and I don't know if any listeners, you know, can agree with this, but there was a time when got like a cappuccino maker. You love cappuccino. Everybody knows they love it, but it was almost impossible to kind of figure out the machine. So we got a cappuccino maker, and it's just sat, and we've never really been able to use it. And there's a manufacturer. I don't have it because it's one of those things that it's kind of on a need-to-know basis. We'll find out. But where the app on your phone actually allows you to kind of, instead of an extra button on the machine itself, the buttons are on your phone on an app, and you can have it make your drink, your coffee drink, your specialty coffee drink, and you can just, like, plug it in. I guess you got to have your phone, right? So that's one thing. But you can go ahead and just kind of plug that in, and then the app kind of connects with the machine itself on the cappuccino side, and boom, perfect.
Wait, and then, so then could I text somebody a cup of coffee if I wanted to?
Now you're talking.
I think you could. So someone will be like, geez, I don't know. I really feel like this. You're like, oh, here. And then you text them maybe the recipe through the app, and then their machine starts making the drink that you know you like.
Oh, wow.
And we just got a text, yes, exclamation point. French fries, egg rolls, mozzarella sticks, all of those are better in an air fryer.
Is that right?
Really?
Wow. Well, see, less oil, you know. But
the oil is what makes it good and bad for you.
I think so, right. That double-edged good and bad for you, I think, is one of the things. In, whether it's the who's telling you that the air fryer is great, you got to have one of those great pitchmen. And so the cooking theater is what happens all the time, too, where you have some of your favorite stars of the culinary world, and they got a big lineup this year, like they always do. You're going to have Ming Tsai and Rick Bayless and Emeril Lagasse and Andrew Zimmern and Robert Irvine, and they'll all have products and recipes. And this is the first time that, instead of, we mentioned, it's kind of exclusive, you got to be in the trade to get there, they're going to be live streaming it at inspiredhome.org, and so you can see those demos actually happening live. So I think that's kind of cool, too. You get a little celebrity chef thing, and they're able to interface with the public through the cooking theater. And I'll be there, too.
Oh, what are you doing there? Just as an observer, or are you teaching a class or something?
Yeah, the craziest thing, so I'm not teaching a class, although I was given that opportunity, which is frightening. We're doing on Monday, I think at 10, we're going to do the on the road, since so many different companies and brands and people are on the road at the show coming to Chicago. We're going to be doing sort of an on the road remote from there. So we'll have some of those food stars. So they're going to stream it. We'll record some of it. We'll have some of it on the show, and we'll highlight some of those cool products that are kind of making a splash this year.
That sounds like fun. It really does. I have to bring up, we only have a minute or two, Dane, but I want to bring this up to you. A lot of restaurants now have this option where you can call up their menu online and do an online order. However, twice in the last 5 weeks, I've had incidents where they can't keep up with the volume. It's like a separate thing. You know how usually you would call up a restaurant, you would just order over the phone, and they write it down, and they say 30 minutes? Well, twice now in the last 5 weeks, because that system is a separate system of doing it online, they're bombarded with orders. We went to a Chinese place the night of the Oscars on Sunday, and they said, if you would have just called the order in, we could have had it within 20 or 30 minutes, but because it was an online order, an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Wow.
So why can't they make that work better? What are they missing out on?
Well, geez, you know what? That's a tough one, right? Because it's one of those things, you never know exactly how busy, as much as you can anticipate based on past performance, what's going to happen. You're never really sure. And then I guess you'd probably put some sort of, governor switch, or maybe just even alert that says, like, hey, maybe call to confirm. As crazy as that sounds, right? Talk to a human.
Right.
I think the secret ingredient to success for making sure everybody understands, whether they're happy or not, but understands how long it's going to take, is you have to have that specialized, 16-year-old girl who answers the phone and says, so-and-so's, please hold, and then they just hang up
Amber,
on you.
Amber, it's always Amber.
That's Amber, right?
Yeah.
I get adult women.
5 minutes and gets back, and it's going to take a while.
And right, it's better that way.
Although fast food places, I know, completely different, but those, if you order through the app, it's so much easier.
Faster?
And I wish everybody would do it, because when you pull up at Taco Bell, all I have to say is, I ordered on the mobile app, yet the person in front of me is like, I'll take a chalupa, and what's in the naked chicken chalupa?
Yeah.
Just order on the app, pull up, bang, bang, boom.
Bing, bang, boom. All right.
Two words, I think it's growing pains, right? As you get you know, what we can do and then what we can sort of handle and integrate into things that we've done for a long time. Those fast food companies, they're going to probably have it down. They've got, you know, scientists and lab coats and trying to figure out, you know, all of that stuff. But
a restaurant, maybe just call them.
Yeah, I think so. Dave, yeah. thanks so much.
Remember, put you on hold for 10 minutes.
Fun to talk to you. Have a great time at the Houseware show and filling in for Nick if you do so.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Dane.
It's Dane Neal. All right. We'll take a break. Some news coming your way next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. This is the song that I ice dance to, Wendy.
This is the song I despise.
Do you?
Yes.
Do you despise this song, really?
I'm a huge Styx fan, but this one...
But not this time?
It was very popular for them, too.
Yes. Yes. The actual song will start in about 5 minutes.
I can just see you ice skating in my head.
Yeah.
I like your skirt.
This is me just kind of circling the ice, and then I start doing figure eights. Nothing big yet. I build. You got to build.
Nice triple axel.
It's very nice of you. It's the part I have the hardest time with. I could Lutz all day long, but it's the triple axel that always trips me up.
People call you a Lutz.
Yeah, I've been called that more than once. All right, so it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. And it turns out that this song... They knew what they were talking about when they wrote this song, Wendy, because robots are taking over.
They had a secret. They had a secret. Crazy.
Not one, not two, not three, but four major companies have announced that in the near future, your deliveries will be made by robots. FedEx, Walmart, Target, and Pizza Hut. I'm not familiar with any of those companies, but apparently they're a big deal somewhere. They say that they're ready to have robots right there on your street in any town in Illinois, delivering your products by way of robots.
Weren't you and I watching on the TV when they had a robot? Like,
yes.
And we said that you would just either steal the robot and steal the Amazon package,
yes.
Knock it down, shoot it with a BB gun. It did not. Who's going to just let that walk down the street without robbing it?
I'm not a violent person at all.
Didn't you want to kick it?
If I saw one, I would knock it over. For no reason.
So its little feet keep going as it's upside down.
Right.
Yeah, I don't see how this is going to work.
This can't possibly work.
I think the drones where you just, like the claw game, you drop it over the person's house might be the better way to go.
See, I'm trying
chimney.
To do... Yes. Yes. Right? That's fun. Right? Because then it's a game of skill
it
for
is.
Them. It's interesting to watch. I wonder, when they say the near future, I'm curious, does that mean in a couple of days? Does that mean by this time next year? Does that mean while we're all here on Earth? When does that mean?
Couple years.
Because it's so futuristic to think about that. But then, like you said, when you see the application of it, you just go, well, that just looks silly. All right. Let's pretend that this was in place right now with the winter that we've had, with the icy streets where nobody can walk a couple of yards without taking a tumble. Will robots be able to navigate the snow and ice?
If you put little snowshoes on them.
Are they snowbots, not robots?
Oh, I like it.
The robotic contraption rolling down the street just might be delivering your FedEx package. That's the vision behind the FedEx same-day bot that the shipping giant unveiled on Wednesday. This sub-200-pound autonomous delivery robot, that's a lot of weight, by the way, 200 pounds, don't you think?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Was developed by the DECA, Development Research Corporation. Their founder is Segway inventor Dean Kamen. The same-day bot is so named because its mission is to help retailers make same-day, last-mile deliveries to local customers. FedEx is collaborating with AutoZone. Get in the zone, Wendy. AutoZone. Lowe's, Pizza Hut, Target, Walgreens, and Walmart. Those are heavy hitters.
Okay, but I get this now. The last mile of the journey. So they have a truck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they
yeah.
release. It's going to look like, you know, giant cockroaches
yes.
that have infested your town. And
yes,
they all
it
walk
will.
In different directions. That's kind of wild.
And keep in mind, even though it doesn't say it in the story, they will eventually turn on us and kill us. I'm not trying to create any kind of panic. But if you've ever seen any movie or television show with robots, eventually they turn on us and kill us. Spoiler alert.
I love my Amazon delivery driver. I seem to get the same woman all the time, and now I just order stuff so I can talk to her. There are all guys in my house. I need a woman to talk to every once
in a while. Will you do me a favor? The next time you talk to her, ask her her thoughts on this. Because if you did that for a living, if you delivered packages for a living, and every 10 minutes there's a story like this saying robots are coming, how does she feel about that?
She might be coming today. I ordered something.
Ask her her thoughts. All right. I'm curious what she thinks. FedEx plans to test the bot this summer in select markets and FedEx office locations, starting the company's own Memphis hometown, pending final approval by the city. The approval would appear to be likely since it has the backing of Mayor Jim Strickland. I wonder what's in it for politicians to back these things. Do they get any, is there anything good out of it that can come to them? Because as you know, sometimes politicians do things if it benefits them.
What would be
the benefit? Sometimes I wonder what the benefit is to a politician in any city, not just Memphis, to make this happen. According to FedEx, on average, more than 60% of merchants' customers live within 3 miles of a store location. Interesting. Demonstrating the opportunity for on-demand, hyper-local delivery. All right, so now there's this question. Where do the robots, what is the start of their journey? Are they in a truck at the beginning and dropped off somewhere in town near a route? Do they come from the store directly? Where would that all start?
I don't know, but now, Bill, I'm thinking of where our FedEx location is, and I had to go there the other day to return something. It doesn't work that way. It's only when a delivery comes.
Right, right, right.
But if all of a sudden, like, 8 little robots were left the store.
Right.
There are busy streets there.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to stop for a robot.
You know the technology that would be in a self-driving car. I'm sure they'd have some built-in navigator system that would say, uh-oh, Plymouth coming at me, got to stop.
I guess, but this is LaGrange Road. It's really busy in countryside.
Yeah.
And if the good news is if the robot gets hungry, there are like 100 zillion fast food choices.
All right. Well, there's that.
That's what I would like. Pizza Hut, you said, is on there.
Yeah. Pizza Hut's one of the ones.
That's wild. Yeah.
Also, does a robot get a whole batch of things to deliver at once, or does it have to keep going back after every one?
I would imagine it's in a batch, but then I would imagine there'd be more mistakes, and you have to tip them.
Right. Yeah,
that's
you would have to tip the robot.
Why?
Also, you know how it's big business now to steal things? Like, once FedEx has delivered it to somebody's house, somebody steals it. Are they going to have to come up with a counter robot to steal from the original robot? How does that play out?
You've put a lot of thought into
this. I am spending a lot of time thinking about it.
Cheryl wants to talk about robots on a cruise ship. Hey, Cheryl.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about this, because I just happened to see an ad for Royal Caribbean's new Symphony of the Seas, which is supposed to be the largest cruise ship, and one of the bars is staffed by robot bartenders that make your drinks, and it showed bottles, like, hanging from the ceiling, and the robot somehow mixing drinks.
Were they quicker than your typical bartender? Because if not...
It was just a small little clip of it, but I just thought, like, what if you have a special order? Like, you want extra this or not much of that or extra ice? Like, how does a robot respond to that?
Right. And will the robot bartender listen to your sad tale of woe? Because I need that in a bartender.
Who cares if they're listening?
With the Pizza Hut thing, I'm thinking, like, every house that they approach has, like, a different... Like a concrete step or stone path. Like, how is that going to...
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like, in an apartment building, it's got to go upstairs. Like, I don't understand.
I bet it texts you when it arrives and you come out and meet it. Because we have stairs. There's no way this robot's getting up there. And you made me think, Cheryl, with an apartment complex, you know, they would just text, hey, your pizza has arrived.
Right, we're here.
Come on down and meet us.
Yeah.
A robot can text?
If a robot can deliver a package or make a drink, of course it can
text. I would think it would have that capability. Can I ask, when you saw the ones on the cruise ship, what did they look like? Did they look humanoid at all or not?
No. It looked like, you know, when you see from like an assembly line from an auto line, just like a stick arms, like it just looked like it did not have any human features. No, did not look like a person. It's just like a metal, you know, just a robot.
Do you think it's better that way, or should they make them look kind of human like?
I think it'd be creepier if they looked human like.
Yeah. Hmm.
personally. Well, and James Patterson actually wrote a book called The Store, and it's kind of what you were saying, Bill, that, like, the robots end up taking over and, like, killing people. So yeah, it is kind of scary.
That almost always happens. Cheryl, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Love you, guys.
Take care. Bye.
All right, quick break, and then we have to... I don't know how this would work.
I'm not sure it'll work well at all.
And I'm telling you, you and I are pretty nice, and we saw that robot walking like a platypus on the sidewalk, and we both had the urge to, like, knock
that
it
over.
Down.
You have to.
Not going to
work. Why wouldn't you? All right, more of this coming up next. Call us or text us at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Can I throw in a very fast disclaimer?
Yeah.
Over the years, anytime the subject of robots comes up on the show, I always say essentially a version of the same thing, that robots are great and they will certainly help us, but then eventually they will come up with their own game plan and turn on us and kill us.
You say that about a certain other thing, too.
What else?
Cats.
Oh, cats are also planning our death at all times, yes. So there's always texts from people saying, please tell me you don't believe that. And just for clarity reasons, I do.
Well, it's been in every movie.
Yeah. If you're a fan of science fiction, that's the biggest underlying theme of most science fiction, is that the robots that we build to make our lives better will eventually turn on us and kill us. So, bye, everybody.
I trust robots. I mean, think about, I do all my stuff online, banking, everything, bill paying.
Yeah.
That's like a robot. It's like my personal assistant.
I was in Best Buy a week ago, and I had not been in one in about a year. And all of a sudden, like, they have a, there's a section, I don't know if it's like this in every Best Buy, but there's like a home appliance section, which keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I didn't know that there was such a wide variety of those robots that'll vacuum or clean your floors.
Oh, the Roombas and all that. Yeah.
Like, in my head, if somebody said, how many of those do you think there are? I'd go, oh, there must be two or three of them. There's got to be at least two or three of them. There's like a dozen or 15 different versions of that.
Have you talked to anyone who has one?
No.
Me neither. And I mean, the concept is great because they have like a washba, too. It's not called that, but...
Why isn't there one of those?
Scrubba.
Scrubba makes sense.
It washes your kitchen floors if you have hardwood or linoleum or what have you.
Right.
Instead of vacuuming, it goes around. It would be weird for me to have that thing just going on its own.
Right.
And no, if you I have know. A pet like I do, Kona would be chasing the thing.
Yeah.
It's a great concept, but I don't personally know anyone who has one and uses one.
I don't think I do either.
I'm curious.
If they do, they're keeping it very quiet. Why wouldn't there be one for your car that attached to your car and just found the shape of your car and just cleaned that? Wouldn't that be a good idea? A carba, obviously.
We got to work on these
names.
You
just take the word and add ba. It's easy to build them.
Why don't they make a rake ba?
So that would just pick
rake
up
your
leaves?
I
don't know
I
the answer
to that.
I bet
they do. A snowba?
So once it accumulated all the leaves, what would it, like, laser blast them to smithereens? What would happen to them?
I guess you do have to empty
You'd
it.
You'd have to put it somewhere.
You'd need this ginormous one to get all the leaves in your yard.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be like a moving shed.
Right. All right, so we need to think these things out before we present these ideas to the council.
But I don't know anyone who's ever had a Roomba, and I have a Roomba and two dogs, and I love it.
It looks like when you see it in a commercial or something, you go, oh, that looks great. But then you'd think there's got to be spots that it either doesn't get to or, like, how does it know where to navigate? I don't know how it would know how to navigate around your things. I mean, there's sensors, obviously. But beyond that.
They came out with something similar that cuts your grass. That thing, ours would run wild. It would all of a sudden, like, go haywire and cut off my toe.
It couldn't know where your property line ends. Could it? How would you program that in to where your boundaries are?
That's a great question.
I don't know.
All right, come on, all these people. I have a Roomba mower. Call in 847. And how does it work? I would bet only people with fenced yards would use it.
Right.
Because then it's not going to go through the fence.
And to be clear, I don't think it's like the Roomba. I don't think that's the type of robot that will turn on you and kill you. I think it's something bigger. So don't be... I don't want the Roomba people to call us say, hey, we've had exactly no Roombas have killed people, so don't spread that information. The robots that will kill us will be much bigger and better.
Well, somebody is referencing Christine, the car.
So oh, yeah,
if
yeah,
you
yeah,
got
yeah,
these
yeah.
automated cars, who's to say they're not going to turn on you?
Yeah.
Although, yeah. Well, why would they turn on you? They don't have a brain in that respect.
But with the self-driving cars, all right, so if they don't, all right, I'm not saying that the self-driving cars will turn on us and kill us, but couldn't somebody manipulate the technology to make them do whatever they wanted? You could break into the system.
Oh, if you could hack a bank account, you can hack a car.
Couldn't you? You could, right? I mean, I would think if somebody has that ability, that would be a fairly easy thing to change, I would imagine. Don't do it. If you're listening, I'm not saying you should do it. I'm just saying if you have that kind of a brain, it must be easy to figure out how to get around things.
There are hackers everywhere. Yeah. They say the grass cutting one or the leaf raking one, it would just mulch it. So that's what it could do.
Oh.
I don't know if these are already. And then I've heard this terrible story, too, and I don't know if it's an urban legend, but this says a friend of mine had a Roomba, and the dog had an accident, and then the Roomba just kept going around, so it spread the dog accident over the house.
Oh.
I've heard that story, too. Again, I've not met the person that it happened to.
That's the crap-ba. That's a. It's like the Roomba. It's a version that never took off.
It's great for day-to-day maintenance. Still have to get some areas from time to time.
I would have to, right?
But that's why you use a Swiffer when you get home.
Right.
I guess on the carpet you wouldn't do that.
Swiffers don't kill anybody.
No.
Moderately safe.
I have one and my dog loves to ride around on it while it cleats my wood floors.
That would be fun to watch.
I have a Roomba. I have two dogs. Lots of hair. Works great.
Oh, all right.
I have not personally met anyone with a Roomba.
No, I'm sure somebody does, but you wouldn't. It wouldn't be the kind of thing you would just brag about, probably.
I don't know. Steve, are you bragging about your Roomba?
No
one ever.
We love it. We love it. We got a dog and a cat, and when we turn, you could turn it on with your phone, you know. And we turned on with the phone, and the cat follows it around for a little bit. The dog, she moves out of the way, and it does a great job.
What's the downside, though? There's got to be some downside, Steve.
The downside is if you let it, you can restrict it to areas by putting this thing on the floor. But if you don't, it will fill up, and you got to be around to empty it.
Oh.
Or it'll just drag all that dirt around, correct?
No, it doesn't drag it around. It just doesn't clean. Like if a vacuum was full, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It just quit cleaning.
Oh,
but other than that, it's...
You would recommend it.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Have you ever tripped over it, Steve?
No, because you hear the little guy driving around.
Have you named it something adorable?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
All right. No.
Call us back when you do.
Okay, sounds
thank you,
great.
Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Appreciate it.
He loves his Roomba.
I guess he does. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He didn't seem like a guy who would love his Roomba.
No,
but, he
he does. It worked for him. All right, we'll take a break. We're headed toward the stream. Come with us or stay here and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Oh, coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.